All right. Thank you very much for your attention and for joining me this morning. I'm just going to set my timer just because I'm a little OCD, I guess. Okay. So, good morning. Thank you for coming bright and early to my presentation today on the phylogenetic relationships of taro land races that we've identified through genome-wide SNP genotyping. I want to acknowledge the co-authors here, and the bulk of this work was done by Martin Helmkamp and Tomas Wolfgruber, and the results that I'm going to present today are based on a paper in press. So taro is in the family Araceae, which is characterized by tremendous morphological diversity and a flower that is a spadix covered by a spathe. It's a very ancient crop. It's one of the oldest in the world, and it's been consumed for an estimated 28,000 years and has been cultivated for around an estimated 9,000 years, mostly for its fleshy corm down here, but the leaves are also eaten, and in some parts of the world, even the flower is eaten. It's mainly grown in tropical Africa, China, and in New Guinea, and in many Pacific islands. The center of its origin and the center of domestication is uncertain. On the one hand, we have native pollinators that depend on the taro for its breeding cycle, located in Indonesia, Papua New Guinea, and in one location in Australia. On the other hand, the center of diversity or speciation for taro is in Indonesia and then in this region of India and Assam and Burma. And here, the genetic diversity of taro is greatest in these two regions as well. And here, the size of the circle represents the amount of genetic diversity present in the population. Taro has been distributed worldwide. Here, I have some arrows added to the map to show patterns of distribution and movement. And the genetic diversity is smaller relative to these central regions. So the vegetative propagation of taro is performed primarily because there's no pollinators, and so there's very little inbreeding between the groups or the cultivars. And this vegetative propagation results in numerous morphologically distinct land races, and so there's an estimated 10,000. Taro doesn't flower very often. I lucked out. I took this flower in my picture and from my taro patch on Monday morning, and it's the first time I've seen flowers in my plants. So here we're going to shift over to Hawaii. So taro was brought to Hawaii by Polynesian seafarers and estimated at around 1000 to 1250 AD. It's primarily eaten here as poi, which is a cooked corm, and here it's being prepared in a traditional way, which is pounded on a poi board with a stone gathered from the river. This here is my daughter's teacher. She goes to an egg science school here on the Big Island. So historically here in Hawaii, there were around 300 land races that were named for their growth features, special use, or specific locality. And because taro was located on different islands, the Hawaiians had different names for the taro on the different islands. And because of that, a lot of these land races are actually synonyms. And so it's an estimated, it's more like probably 150 to 170 different land races that were being cultivated on the islands or raised. With regard to special use, each land race was used for a particular thing. So some were for poi, some were eaten for the leaves, and some were used in religious ceremonies or in funerals. And so it's very culturally important to Hawaiians. And also taro is very high up on the origin of people in terms of the belief about human origins. So in 1930s, agronomist Whitney and colleagues assembled a central nursery collection. And their goal was to collect all of the different land races that were present on the islands and to categorize those and then also classify them in a dichotomous key. And so they assembled around 200 land races, which after accounting for synonyms resulted in around 69 distinct forms. And they actually bred them out for several generations and measured the stability of morphological traits. They also had 15 other land races in their collection. At the completion of their study, only 74 of the 84 land races that they described remained. And so the dichotomous key that they developed was carefully incorporated the Hawaiian people's language to understand how they group the different land races and also their naming conventions. And so because taro is culturally important, it is the most culturally important crop on the island of Hawaii, and because the different land races are used for different purposes, we sought to do this project in order to help guide the conservation and breeding programs for taro. And so first, our first goal was to investigate patterns of relatedness among the Hawaiian and Pacific land races. We wanted to determine whether or not the genetic signatures of the taro matched the morphology-based classification. And also, we sought to develop a tool to discriminate among the Hawaiian and other taros. For methods, we used a genotyping by sequencing protocol. We sequenced 64 of the original 69 land races that have been perpetuated in form since the 30s. And we also used some outgroups from Palau and also other parts of Asia. We sequenced on a HiSeq 2500. We got around 250 million reads. We called our SNPs, we created a de novo reference, mapped back to the reference, called SNPs, and ended up with around 2,000 SNPs that were usable for our analyses. And I'm not going to talk about goal three just because of time. So all of you are probably familiar with structure plots, but I wanted to do just a very quick review of what these actually mean and how to interpret them. So basically, with structure, the user assigns the number of structures to be investigated. And so here I have an example of K of 2. Each individual bar represents one individual and their collective genotype. And so what cluster does is computationally takes the genotypes and assigns those to the various groups. Here are K of 2, so either cluster 1 or cluster 2. And then it proportionally calculates an ancestry coefficient that's like basically the proportion that that individual belongs to a given group. And so here we have two groups. We have our brown cluster and our yellow cluster. And this individual here is admixed. It has half and half. We can increase the number of clusters, which will reveal additional structure within the population. And so here, it pops out that there's actually another group over here that shares some shared ancestry with this group, and this one, again, is an admixed individual. And so applying this method to our taro SNP results, so Whitney identified 8 different groups from the Hawaiian traditional groupings, and the Hawaiians had actually 25 groupings in their name, so the Hawaiian people. And so within those 25 groups, there were several land races that had actually disappeared, and Whitney had only found 8. So here, you know, we have, here's one group, Kai, Mana, Ula'ula, Laloa, Manini, and Lahua. And I'll talk about each of these groups in a little bit more detail in a couple slides later. This is hyphenated for reasons that I'll explain in a couple slides for now. You'll note that that's only 6 groups. We have 2 that are missing of the 8. The first is Pico, and we didn't include Pico as a grouping because Pico actually assigns all over throughout the different clusters. And Pico is named for this leaf sinus, so the petiole attaches down here. We are also missing, did not recover strong structure for the group Ili'ili, which in Hawaiian means dark colored or black, and the petiole is blackish or reddish. And you see Ili'ili is over here and over here. So next I'll iterate through the structure results so that you can see how different structure becomes apparent when we change the cluster number. So here this is a K of 3. Point out 2 things, unclassifiable accessions. This is Avu and this is a Lihilihi Molina. These are 2 of the land races that did not fit in the dichotomous key, so they are basically unclassified. So next I'll step through the different structure results. So you can see this Avu, again, it shows an indication of admixture. And over here, this Lihilihi Molina also shows some admixture. And then this red group pops up when we have this K of 5, and then here, you can just kind of take a moment and look at the major groupings that are consistent across all the different K values. Lahua definitely stands out. The Laloa Manini definitely shares some ancestral relatedness. And then the Ula'ula here, kind of, it's pretty consistent within this group. And so while this shows one way of relatedness, or the admixture, within populations, it doesn't show you just how diverse the individuals are genetically. And so for that, we can use a phylogenetic tree. And so here is our phylogeny. Here's our Asian outgroup and our Palawan outgroup. And you can see this kai is up here, nested between the two. And there's our kai ala. Mana, which means branching, is contained in this clade right here. And you can see there's considerable genetic diversity within the clade. Ula ula, so ula is red in Hawaiian. The ula ula makes a nice single clade here. However, the Lauloa and Manini, this is actually monophyletic. And so we're proposing a reclassification of these two groups into a hyphenated name, Lauloa Manini, to reflect this relatedness. And here we have pictures of the two. Manini means striped, and Lauloa means longleaf. Here's our Avu, the oddball that could not be characterized, and then our Lahua group. And contained within each of these groups are numerous of the other individuals that didn't fall into that eight-group classification system from the Hawaiians. Some of these have asterisks, and note those asterisks. These are land races that were brought in the 1920s that are from the South Seas. And there's some interesting patterns here because we know that or we believe that the Polynesians brought the taro over to Hawaii, but we don't have a complete understanding of the back and forth of people between the different regions. And so we might be able to shed some light on the movement of people through use of our taro results. So the principal findings in this study are that Hawaiian taro land races contain sufficient genetic diversity to discriminate among the majority of accessions. There's strong support for the match between the traditional groupings and the morphological features. So this is consistent with the genetic basis to certain traits. However, there's some exceptions. The Piko and Ili'ili recall those grouped in different locations. And based on our results, we propose minimal reclassification. We also found that SNPs, in the future, we can use the SNPs to facilitate investigations of the genetic basis of relevant phenotypic traits. So say, for example, you want to breed the red petiole. Perhaps we can identify some SNPs that locate a gene and then do some breeding based on those. And last, our panel of SNPs can be developed for genetic stock identification to rapidly identify land races. And that may not sound like a big thing, but if you need to grow taro for a year in order to figure out which form it is, this can actually really aid the breeding program. And also, it can identify hybrids. And given that breeding is ongoing, we want to be able to maintain these pure Hawaiian lineages and be able to detect them as well for cultural reasons. And so if you're interested in learning more, our paper is coming out. It's in press right now. Most of what I presented was from this paper. We also have a book chapter that's coming out as well. Has a lot of the background and more information on genetics. And if you would, on Friday, there's a poster session, Genetics and Germplasm. Rashan, who's back there, has a poster. So you can go and ask him all the questions you don't have time to ask right now because my time is almost up. So with that, I think I have time for a couple of questions I'd be happy to answer. Thank you very much. Yes. Yeah, so the question is, did the groupings coincide with the geographical position of the islands? And the answer is, I do not know, because when Whitney amassed his collection, there's not a lot of information about where the different accessions were sourced from. Maybe it's buried somewhere, but it's not in his bulletin that he produced. The bulletin is called Bulletin 84, and it's produced by the Ag Experiment Station that was in Honolulu. The Hawaiian, so the question is whether or not the taro group with maybe substructure of the Hawaiian peoples on the islands, is that correct? No, that's a very good question. So when Whitney amassed his collection and when the dichotomous key was produced, he was very careful to retain the Hawaiian nomenclature. And so as a whole, because there's a lot of movement around the islands, the nomenclature was fairly consistent, even though the land races might be named different things. So, okay. Thank you.